Okay, guys, thank you so much for coming back to the channel. I've got Morley Robbins back again today. We have a list of your questions from our first interview, which if you missed it, I will link it right below this video. But, you know, our last conversation, and we were talking a little bit just now before I turned the camera on, was talking a lot about histamines and copper. So we're going to hit copper first. We're also going to hit magnesium today because I have some magnesium questions and some of those came up. But before we jump in, how are you today, Morley?
I'm magnificent. No, I'm doing great. Just dealing with the general insanity that we're all working our way through, but continuing to have daily epiphanies with the research. And that's always the highlight of my day is between 6:30 and 9:30, I have this chance to take a deep dive into the research. And I'm always amazed at what I learned. So today was another good day. So
wow, always more will be revealed. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before we turn on the camera about the collective and the stress that everyone's been under this year. And then the deficiencies that stress has really created in people, and the deficiencies in our soil. You know, can we hit that just a second before we dive into these topics?
Well, yeah. The thing is, we live in a very different world than our ancestors. Mm-hmm. And the analogy that I'm using is that our ancestors grew up on a farm, and we grew up near factories. And farms and factories are very different. A farm is obviously based on nature, but it's really based on a process. And what drives the process on a farm is to reuse things. So what do we reuse? We reuse sun and soil and seed and excrement. It's a four-letter word, but I won't say it. And that's the basis of a farm. It's right. To recycle all of those basic ingredients so we can grow food, whether it's plant food or animal food. That's not the philosophy of a factory. A factory is to replace everything. Mm. Oh, your washer and dryer is broken, buy a new one.
Yeah.
Or you need a new car. You need a new computer, whatever. It's not about recycling it, reusing it. It's to replace it. Well, the mentality of big pharma is the factory. Mm. Oh, you're low in magnesium. You've got to replace it. And it took me the longest time to realize why people were losing their magnesium, because they're under stress, right?
Yes.
But it's that when that stress becomes chronic, it becomes oxidative stress. Mm. And it's a very important distinction that we all know, that feeling in our gut. We can go back to the beginning of the year when everything, like world changed. We're like, what? I can't go to work. I can't go outside. That was a very unsettling time. And then it settled in and it became a chronic stress. So the way we're wired is when we're faced with an acute stress, we lose magnesium and B vitamins. Like that, they just poof, they go right out of our body, and our ancestors would have had a diet that would replace them.
Yes,
but we don't have that. We don't have that luxury, because what's the food label focusing on? Food label is focusing on calcium and iron, vitamin D. It's not paying attention to retinol and magnesium and copper, which is what runs our body. And so we lose magnesium, lose the B vitamins, and we think the B vitamins we're getting in the food we eat are okay. Well, those are synthetic B vitamins. Mm-hmm. They're not the same. And when the stress becomes chronic, becomes longer term, well, then our liver produces a protein called metallothionein. The metallothionein binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. But we don't know what 1,000 times is. We know what, think of someone who's twice as strong as you are, maybe three times as strong. 1,000 times? So we can't even comprehend that.
Yeah.
And so the copper gets locked up, and then it's not available to metabolize the oxygen in our body. And when the oxygen can't be activated and turned into energy, or if it can't be deactivated to prevent exhaust, well, that's the beginning of the problem. That exhaust is oxidative stress. Mm-hmm. And that oxidative stress builds, and then it starts to affect pathways, metabolic pathways, and that's where all the symptoms start. There is no disease. It's all stress-induced mineral dysregulation. Mm-hmm. And when the minerals are all dysregulated from each other, then we get what's called metabolic dysfunction. Well, what is that? It's the mitochondria are defunct. They don't work right. And it's really, it's fascinating. It's really simple. But when you begin to think about it on a systemic level, it's fascinating to think about the orchestration of effort to respond to stress. And so the food system isn't designed to restore minerals.
No.
Because the farming system isn't designed to maintain minerals. So, you know, they're spraying NPK, which really messes up mineral status. Oh, it's got nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium. But it's like, what is that doing? It blocks copper absorption. Mm. Why is that significant? Because 90% of the nitrogen fixation is supposed to take place in the soil. And then what do they start to use? Organophosphates to kill the weeds, supposedly. Well, it's killing us.
Right, absolutely.
And Stephanie Seneff and her colleagues have done a masterful job of explaining all that. And then we get to the food processing side. So, you know, we should be buying our food from farmers.
Yes.
Who we know and can look in the eye and say, how are you feeding your soil? Because that's where it starts. What are you doing to make sure you've got good minerals and microbes? Microbes are where the problem is. If the soil doesn't have microbes, it can't work with the minerals. You can spray all the minerals you want. If the soil doesn't have the level of microbes, then you've got a serious problem. And so buy food from a farmer's market, shop the perimeter of the supermarket. Don't ever go in the center of it.
No.
And if you're getting your food from the frozen food section, from a box, a can, or your car window, it's not real food. And so that's just more stress for your body to deal with. And then when we don't feel well, we go see the doctor. What's the number one reason why people go see the doctor?
To get medication, right?
No, it's because they have fatigue. Number one, loss of energy is the number one reason why people go. Well, here's the catch. Doctors don't have a yardstick for energy. They don't know how to measure it, and they don't know how to make it. And so they give you medication, just as you indicated. And what does the medication do? It steals more minerals.
Right.
Especially magnesium and copper.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, once you start one medication, then you have so many side effects that there's another one to be prescribed. And then before you know it, you're on multiple. I mean, before I started my health journey and the carnivore diet and really paying attention and meditating and everything that I do, I was on 5 different medications. And I had started the one, but it had side effects, you know, and this was all to manage anxiety and depression and then sleep. And it was like, I just woke up one day and said, I'm on 5 medications. This is crazy. This doesn't make sense. And it's not even helping, you know, this can't be the right solution, you know?
No, it's very well said. And I think the number of people that face that same buildup of medications, not every one of them has that a wherewithal to step back and say, wait a minute, this isn't working.
Right.
And so the medications, you know, where does it start? It usually starts with blood pressure or anxiety or reflux.
Yes.
Right? Maybe birth control pills. Again, I understand the conflict around that. I think it's unfortunate in our society that all the burden is put on the woman and not the man.
Yeah.
But the problem is, birth control pills are horrifically
horrible. All kinds of, and the thing is that I want to start doing, I know we're sidetracking a little bit, I want to start doing more on my channel is bringing fertility awareness to women to mm-hmm. empower them to know you can really only get pregnant, you know, 4 or 5 days out of the month, if that. Mm-hmm. And if you understand how your body works and you know how to track those things, then you don't need your birth control pills. If you can really sit down and track, you know, and be responsible about those things, you don't have to put those hormones in your body, which I see causing a multitude of problems for Absolutely. Women. That's one thing I feel blessed that once I had my daughter 12 years ago, I tried to go back on the pill and it made me so incredibly sick that I couldn't tolerate it. So I haven't been on any form of birth control in 12 years, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. But I've had to learn how to track everything.
You got to pay the piper somehow.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the medications are not the answer. You know that. And so the key is we want to deal with our stress. That's the bottom line. We live on a planet that has a lot of stress. We know that. And so the best definition of stress I've ever seen was by Mark Hyman, who heads up the alternative health practice at Cleveland Clinic. Stress is the body's inability to make energy for the mind to deal with its environment. Mm. What we've got to do is we've got to be able to metabolize our stress.
Yes.
And that means we've got to be able to make energy for the mind to then deal with whatever's going on out there. And at the end of the day, you got to have magnesium and copper to make energy. Mm. It's that basic. And it isn't 64 minerals, it's two. And so what happens is when we have this recurring interaction with stress, it lowers our magnesium status. Mm-hmm. And then we start wearing night vision binoculars and everything is bigger and brighter than it really is. And we overreact to the situation. And so when we are hyperreactive, well, then that becomes a stress. Mm-hmm. And so the beauty of like magnesium supplements is they're chill pills. And trying to think of her name. She's a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, Emily, I'm blanking on her last name, but she has a wonderful article online that's called Magnesium, the Chill Pill. And it really is. So people need to know that magnesium really helps us process our environment, helps us to accept our environment, but it also helps us metabolize our environment. And it's really important to be sensitive to that. I was talking with a buddy of mine who's a chiropractor just yesterday, and we were chatting about a couple of things outside of his office. And then his colleague came along, who's also a chiropractor, holding a bottle of magnesium. And he turns to Ryan, he said, "This stuff's amazing. Thank you so much for recommending it." And Ryan and I just laughed because we're like, that's nutrition 101.
Yeah.
But this 50-something chiropractor didn't know how important it was. He's like, "I can really deal with life now."
Yeah.
So he's got magnesium. That's great. And when I cut my teeth on this whole subject area, I focused, you know, on magnesium, thinking that all we had to do was take magnesium to solve our problem. Well, it turns out that you can take magnesium all day long, but magnesium will not correct the copper iron dysregulation that we talked about last week.
Yes.
And so that is really important for people to know that magnesium is important, but it's not everything.
Yeah.
And it's not like there are 100 things. It's probably maybe 10 things we need to be sensitive to.
Yeah.
But the two big inputs are get more magnesium in your diet, minerals in general, but more magnesium and more copper, and lower the iron footprint in your body. Mm. And the iron is so destructive. And again, this is, we live in a world now where the social lie is you're anemic,
yes,
you're copper toxic, and so you need more iron and we've got to get rid of that copper. And it's like, no, that's the exact opposite of what the problem is. People are copper deficient, and when they're low in copper, iron builds in their liver. And that just adds to the metabolic stress of the body. And it's hard to even put an order of magnitude on it. It's off the chart as far as I'm concerned. And the way I describe it for clients is we're all subclinical hemochromatosis. Because I'm the third generation, you're probably the fourth generation of your family to be iron toxic. And so it plays out in our body, generation to generation, mother to child. And so, you know, the imbalance builds with each generation. Unless you correct it with the approach that we outline in the root cause protocol. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so the magnesium issue is a cornerstone issue, because a lot of people don't know how important it is, but they don't know how effortless it helps us deal with our stress.
Yeah. Oh, I notice a huge difference with magnesium. I mean, my daughter takes it. I take it. My husband takes it. We go through a lot of magnesium in our house, and we have for years. And that was one of the things, you know, we started working with naturopathic doctors early with my daughter and her autism. And that was one of the first things we were lucky that someone said, we need a good high quality magnesium glycinate that she's taking. And that's going to cut down on some of the behavior, some of the agitation, help with sleep. And that I've noticed a difference right away with her. So then of course we all jumped on and start taking it as well.
No, it's a no-brainer. And so magnesium is legendary at solving symptoms, but it does not solve the underlying metabolic problem.
Yeah.
And if the oxygen doesn't get managed right in the body, it will become oxidative stress. We're wired that way. It's not like, well, Sarah, it's too bad your body isn't behaving. It's like, no, all bodies do this. We're all designed the exact same way that we react to oxygen. It's the second most reactive element on the planet. You know what the third most reactive element is? So we got fluoride. Fluoride is number one. Oxygen is number two. Ozone, number three. Uh-huh. And people are taking ozone treatments like they're candy.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of ozone. Why? I know I sound like a heretic. Like everyone's talking, oh, wow, it's just great.
Yeah, it's a trendy thing right now. I've never done it, but I've heard quite a bit of people that do it and swear by it.
To me, it doesn't make sense to add oxygen, add hydrogen. Don't add hydrogen peroxide. Don't add nitric oxide. Are you kidding? Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And people do it all the time.
Doesn't that kill brain cells, nitric oxide?
Well, it does a lot of things. I mean, there's a good side and a bad side to nitric oxide. It's a sibling molecule.
Yeah.
It, again, this chiropractor friend of mine, Ryan Fox, he calls nitric oxide, carbon monoxide, and hydrogen sulfide. They're the three what are called gasotransmitters. They have the same effect as neurotransmitters, but they're all gases. They're really powerful, and they're completely misunderstood in the mainstream circles of nutrition and medicine.
Gotcha. I feel like we could take so many detours.
I know. I'm gonna let you decide the direction on that one.
I want to jump into copper so we can kind of close out the copper conversation, because I've had a lot of copper questions.
I'm shocked. I thought I explained it beautifully.
I thought you did too.
What was I missing?
Yeah. Well, I feel like these are some pretty decent questions.
Good. I look forward to them.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, the main question that people are asking is, I don't want to eat organ meats. I don't like organ meats. What else can I do to bump up my copper levels? Do I have to take organ meats, or can I take a copper supplement? Do you recommend one?
I thought these were a bunch of paleo strong toughies.
People sometimes are on my channel. They're keto. They're carnivore curious. You know, I don't hate. I welcome everybody who wants keto information.
Keto curious. I love that. That's good. Well, let's put it into perspective. Our ancestors ate organ meats and threw muscle meats to the dogs. And we're so sophisticated now we're so modern, we eat muscle meats and throw organ meats to the dogs. Again, people don't think
about the dogs are lucky.
The dogs are lucky, but they don't think about the fact that we really are living a backward world from our ancestors. And so I was raised by a mom who grew up in the country, and she was a good cook, and we had lots of organ meat, you know, heart and kidney, liver, a lot of liver, tongue. When she wanted to have brain, I said, no, you're having brain, I'm not having brain. I've never been able to bring myself to that, although people swear by it.
Oh yeah, but I've never tried it. I've heard a lot of people really love it.
Oh yeah, no. So it is an acquired taste, I get that. So like with, I have a couple options. One, people can get desiccated organ meats. And there are a number of companies that sell that, you know, ancestral supplements, Perfect Nutrition. I think Paleo Valley has their own brands, some other companies as well. But the point is you can pop the pills, and that's a really decent alternative. You can go to your local butcher. Some towns still have butchers, but you can certainly find them at Whole Foods. And you can order these organ meats, and you can have them ground up, and you can mix them with ground beef. So that's another option, especially with kids. Make hamburgers or make meatballs or do a meatloaf with a mixture of muscle meat and organ meat, and you won't taste it the same way.
Yeah.
And as your body begins to acquire that taste, then you can begin to start to have the organ meats all by themselves. But again, it doesn't taste the same as a muscle meat. But the importance of it is that there's more copper in organ meats than there is in muscle meats. There's very little copper in muscle meat. Mm-hmm. Why is it red? Because it's got a lot of hemoglobin. What's in the hemoglobin? Oh yeah, it's iron. So the muscle meat is all iron, and the organ meat is heavily copper. And that's what we're looking for, is that nutrient-rich copper that's complex, it's bound in proteins that our body can use. So that's, again, if you can get over the taste of it and the texture of it, the impact it has on our metabolism is amazing.
Yeah.
And here's a way to make liver, if people are kind of skittish about it. First, you make bacon. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't love bacon, right?
Right.
So then with the lard in the pan, then braise onions and garlic. Get those, you know, all nice and warmed up and just right, nice and soft. And then get your liver that you got from the butcher. And, you know, you need a piece about the size of the palm of your hand. Doesn't have to be a lot. It's like 3 or 4 ounces. And all you do is braise it on either side just for a couple minutes so that the center is pink. The most common mistake that people make is because they're afraid of it, they overcook it because they're trying to kill it. Mm-hmm. And then it turns into shoe leather. Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't taste right.
Right. But, and they're probably getting rid of a lot of the nutrients that way. Mm-hmm. As well, if they overcook it. Yeah.
But when it's still pink inside, you can chew it. It actually tastes better. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised how it tastes with the onions and garlic and the bacon and the mashed potatoes. And who doesn't love mashed potatoes? And, you know, I think you'll be surprised that there are ways to make it. A friend of ours does it. It's a beef stroganoff recipe, but she uses liver instead of beef. Incredible dish. A really, really delicious way to do it. And so there are a lot of different ways where you can make chili.
Yep. I sneak it into spaghetti for my daughter. I get the keto noodles, and we just mix in liver, and she eats it. You get the Rao's tomato sauce. That's really good. And
absolutely.
She'll eat it. She loves it. Cleans the plate. I think people are just it's so crazy how backwards we are, that we're so terrified and grossed out by organ meats. And I was too, when I first started eating this way, more of a primal way, I was like, oh, I couldn't taste, the liver tasted so bloody and metallic. Mm-hmm. And now a couple years in, it's like nothing. It's no big deal.
Right. Feel so much better. Adjust. Right.
Yeah, your taste buds absolutely adjust. But so what I'm understanding from your answer is you don't want them going out and taking an actual copper supplement. Mm-hmm. You'd rather them eat the organ meats.
The copper supplements, the vast majority of copper supplements are, copper is a metal that has either a plus one valence or a plus two valence. One is your friend, two is not your friend.
Mm.
And all the copper supplements are plus two valence.
Ah.
So copper in the plus two form is very hard on our pathways. And it just reacts with things. And so when you take a copper supplement, you're working against your best interest. And so the copper one is what's found in food. And it's found in plant food and animal food, because the plants and animals know how to turn that copper into the form that's more usable. So that's the key. And there are a lot of controversy around that. Mm-hmm. That we seem to have lost the ability to reduce the plus two form to a plus one form. There's an actual bacterial function that does that, but antibiotics have wiped that out of our system. So that's where we have a shortage there, and that becomes a problem.
How much organ meat do you think is optimal for people to add into their diets to help with this copper balance?
Well, I would at least do it weekly. I've got some clients who do it two or three times a week. I've got some clients who do it every day, but they're doing smaller doses of it.
Yeah.
I would just encourage people to experiment with it.
Yeah.
I think what I grew up with, and what I still do, is organ meats at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And at a bare minimum, three times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, you know, ease into it. Again, it is a change. People love and hate change. And so you've got to be gentle on yourself when you're making a big dietary change like this.
Because
what I've learned over the years is that it's easier to get people to change their religion than to change their diet.
That's the truth. And people get just as fired up about food as they do religion. Oh my goodness.
They do. Yeah. Well, think about it. It's the most intimate act. You're putting something in your mouth.
Yeah.
And so whatever you put in your mouth, you trust.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it is a very powerful process. And to make those changes, you have to really respect the significance of it to make the change.
Powerful. I never thought of it that way. That's extremely mm-hmm. powerful.
Yeah.
One other thing about the organ meats. Now, I'm finding with my own experience and with my daughter, because she won't really eat the organs unless I, you know, do the spaghetti every now and then. I give her, and I myself take the desiccated supplements just every day. It's just part of my routine. I don't feel like those are as powerful as actually eating the real food. What's your opinion on that?
You know, it's interesting. The all of the products will profile the nutrients in the product. And as I understand it, in talking to a couple different manufacturers, that those measurements of the nutrients are all taken before they get desiccated.
Ah, okay.
So desiccation is a silly way of saying dry.
Yeah, saturated, yeah.
Right. And so to my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong, if someone knows differently, I would love to know. But my understanding is that no one measures nutrient levels after it's been dried.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be kind of curious. Would it change? I don't know.
Mm.
But it could. So that's the first thing. And so I've got 25 vegan clients taking desiccated beef liver. That's how desperate they are to feel better. Mm-hmm. So I'm thrilled to have that as a mechanism to help people get the nutrients they need. I agree with you. I think the real deal is better for us.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people are not willing to make that change. So you meet them where they are and you try to ease them into better and better choices.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's another question. If we had our copper tested, what are optimal ranges? I had mine tested and it was around 80. It's a question from someone watched the last video.
Tested on a blood test?
It sounds that way, yes.
Okay. Well, copper is a mineral or a metal that needs to be in context. So I cobbled together what I call the full Monty iron panel. Mm. And it looks at three different forms of iron status. It looks at magnesium inside the red blood cell. It looks at zinc. It looks at copper, but it also looks at ceruloplasmin, which is the protein that copper expresses in. It's probably the most important protein in the body. So it's the biggest protein in the body. And then I also look at vitamin A and vitamin D. Everyone's all a Twitter about D and how it's going to save them from this and that. And it leaps tall buildings. And it's like, what people don't know is that all of the attributes of vitamin D are the active form. You got to have magnesium to make the active form. And we got to have magnesium to make the storage form too. But to get from storage to active, you got to have magnesium. It's got to be connected to the vitamin D receptor. And the vitamin D receptor works best when it's connected to RXR, which is a derivative of vitamin A. Mm. So if people don't have vitamin A in their diet, which most don't, because they're drowning themselves in vitamin D, not knowing that it's lowering their magnesium, depleting their potassium, and so on and so forth. So the point is that there's a spectrum of minerals that need to be assessed to properly answer what does that copper of 80 really mean.
Okay.
Ideally, zinc and copper and iron in a woman's body should all be 100.
Okay.
And when the copper is at 80, I'm wondering where the ceruloplasmin is. I just spoke with a client before we connected, and her copper was 80. And her ceruloplasmin was 25, and the ideal numbers are 130.
Okay.
And so the ratio is 3.33, and her ratio was 3.2. So her ratio was really good, but her numbers were 20% below where they should be. Mm. Too much. So the delta was 20%. So what's our normal body temperature is 98.6, mm-hmm. right? When we have what's called a fever, the start of a fever is 102. Mm. Well, the difference between 102 and 98.6 is 4%. That's a 4% differential. And we know how bad we feel when we have a fever. So a 20% difference, that's five times a fever. So the delta, it's just a little change. It's 20%. No, it's a huge, huge difference that people don't recognize the impact that has metabolically. So the 80, I would predict she's running low on copper, in part because she's high in iron. Mm. She doesn't have enough food in her diet that has copper in it. And again, we're back to organ meats. Mm-hmm. We're back to things like sauerkraut and, you know, vitamin C, real vitamin C, and a number of other factors. So it starts to get encumbered by all these other factors that we just need to be sensitive to.
Got it.
So it's called the Full Monty Iron Panel, and people can go to request a test, or they can go to Ulta Wellness, and they can look for the Full Monty Iron Panel, and it'll pop up. It's about $250. Okay. I see zero from that test. So it's not like I'm trying to pin people to spend money so that I can get some. It's just, I want people to get the truth.
Yeah.
I really want them to know what's going on inside their body.
Yeah, and people just look at one number, and you can't diagnose the whole body from one measurement. There's so many other things that come into play, right?
Exactly. And speaking of that, one of the other great mistakes that's made in medicine land is people are being told that they are anemic.
Yes.
Based on a ferritin blood test. And again, you've got to have all three factors. You've got to have hemoglobin, serum iron, and ferritin. You've got to look at them in context with each other. And ferritin only blood tests, I believe, are basis of malpractice.
Mm.
I think they are. I've renamed the protein. I call it error-tin because it's so misleading.
Yeah.
And the protein will either run low or high for completely different reasons. I know why, and I'm teaching people the significance of it, but it has nothing to do with iron status.
Mm.
And so the ferritin blood test has become ubiquitous and very misleading. And I would caution people from using that as any kind of standalone indication of what their iron status is. It's just not responsible.
Yeah.
You just have to be really careful about that.
Well, here's a question that kind of correlates with what you were just saying. She says, I had my blood test done a little over a year ago, and I found out that I had tons of copper that my body wasn't using and quote unquote low iron. They put me on heme iron, zinc, and vitamin C, and a bunch of other things. Everything he says not to take. So then how do you get your body to use the copper that you already have? I know that's a loaded question.
No, it's a great question. And again, so that is the paradigm. I have high copper and low iron.
Mm-hmm.
And we gotta step back from that and gaining a better understanding of what's really going on. The question that's not being asked is why?
Mm.
Why does my iron look low in the blood? Why does my copper look high in the blood?
Mm.
All facets of iron metabolism run on bioavailable copper. This is not taught in doctor school. I don't know why, but it's not. It's in the literature, very clearly in the literature. And when copper is not bioavailable, it causes iron to rise in the liver and in the tissue. And so it doesn't show up in the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So again, how are they determining my iron status? With a blood test. And the tissue can hold 10 times more iron than is found in the blood. And so, again, that's not my theory. That's Bruce Ames and David Kalilia from Berkeley, who came to that conclusion in 2004. So it's a really important understanding that there's a difference between iron in the blood and iron in the tissue.
Mm.
And the problem is, there's only two ways to measure iron in the tissue. Needle biopsy, very painful, you first, or a T2 MRI, very expensive, again, you first. And so doctors routinely use blood tests, which are misleading. They don't reveal the true status of iron in the tissue. And then when copper looks high, it means it's outside of its protein, ceruloplasmin. And the question again is, why? What is aggravating ceruloplasmin? Well, guess what aggravates ceruloplasmin? Ascorbic acid. One of the most
supplements, right? Yeah.
One of the most toxic supplements on the planet. That it's billed as vitamin C, but it's not. It's ascorbic acid. And real vitamin C complex has six parts. So we drive cars that have an engine and a steering wheel and four wheels and a cover, right? And that's the vitamin C complex. It's an amazing molecule. What is ascorbic acid? It's the cover of the car and no moving parts. And this cover of the car is really toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't know that. And it's particularly toxic to copper metabolism because it prevents copper absorption. That's a problem. And it guarantees iron storage. That's another problem. It's like, again, not my idea. It's in the literature. I've got 15 articles that talk about the toxicity of ascorbic acid. So the protocol that she was given was zinc and vitamin C, and what was the third element?
Heme iron.
So we're poisoning the body with heme iron, and then we're poisoning the body with lots of zinc, because what does zinc do? It triggers that metallothionein we were talking about at the beginning, binding up the copper again. That's not good. And then we're poisoning the protein ceruloplasm with ascorbic acid. And what happens when you do that? All the copper floods out of the protein.
Mm.
And you know when they figured this out? 1948.
Wow.
And so doctors are, you know, they're blind. They don't know. They're just see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. They don't know because they're not taught. We can't blame the doctors.
Yeah.
They're not taught. Now, my clients say, Morley, you're too hard on the doctors. They weren't taught this in doctor school. And I say, you know, you're right. But I wasn't either. I went to business school. But I figured it out because I was so upset by what I was seeing. This raging level of chronic disease. It's out of control.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people are saying it's 88% of people that are metabolically unhealthy. Do you think that's accurate, or do you think it's actually higher than that?
That's a great question. It is every bit as high as that, and maybe higher.
I agree.
And I don't know how you make the determination. I guess you could tell by the conditions that they're expressing and things like that. You know, again, number one reason why we go to the doctor, fatigue. Well, that's the beginning of all chronic disease, is a failure to make energy. Number one event. If I can't make energy, I don't feel right. And so when there's too much iron in the mitochondria, can't make energy. It crowds out the copper, crowds out the oxygen. And it's really easy stuff. I mean, this is, you know, the thing is that people we've all been trained to believe in disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we're living in the land of Oz. And we see these talking heads that we call doctors, and we believe all that, the, you know, flames and smoke and all that. And it's like, no, there's a bunch of flying monkeys. And what was in the water that killed the Wicked Witch of the West? Minerals. That's why she died. So, I don't know. It's a lot simpler than people realize.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm hearing, and I could be wrong because I'm looking at some of these other questions, and people are like, you know, should I use transdermal copper? And, you know, just looking for other ways. It seems like to me the copper solution, what would help the copper would be the organ meats, regularly having those, and not eating so much muscle meat.
Really important for people to do is they need to go to the website, rcp123.org.
I'll link it below.
Yep. Download the protocol. It's 32 pages long. And there's a whole series of stops. And people will be surprised by what we tell them to stop. Stop taking vitamin D. Stop taking calcium. Stop taking zinc. Stop taking synthetic B vitamins. You know, they're like, what? And we have valid reasons for all the recommendations we make. And then there's a series of starts. And the three most important starts are around bee pollen, real vitamin C complex, and grass-fed beef liver. And those are three very rich sources of bioavailable copper. Again, we've been conditioned to think we can run to the GNC or Whole Foods or whoever and get a copper supplement. And my research, my experience with clients is the supplements, all the copper-based supplements, cause chaos in the body.
Mm.
And so I'm very careful about what I recommend.
Okay. What do you think about nutritional yeast? This is a personal question.
The nutritional yeast historically was a great source of copper. Yeast is amazing. But what is nutritional yeast today? Most of them are fortified.
Mm.
What are they fortified with? Iron-based B vitamins.
Vitamins, yeah.
And so we got to be really careful about that. Now, there is an unfortified nutritional yeast, and I can never remember the name of it.
Is it Bragg's?
No, it's not Bragg's. Bragg's is fortified.
Okay.
I think it comes from India. Okay. And then what we also recommend is rice bran. Mm-hmm. And that's another source of B vitamins, but the B vitamins are going to have copper as well. And so we have to be, what did our ancestors also use? Brewer's yeast.
Brewer's yeast, okay.
Brewer's yeast is amazing. Yeast loves copper. Mm. So that when you take a cup of cabbage, it has 60 milligrams of vitamin C, real vitamin C. But when you let it ferment mm-hmm. in the yeast in the air, it becomes sauerkraut. Mm-hmm. And that 60 milligrams increases tenfold to 600 milligrams of vitamin C. And that's the magic of the microbes working to take advantage of nutrients that only they know how to work with. And so sauerkraut, which you can buy at Costco that's not pasteurized, is a great source of vitamin C. Hmm. There are natural alternatives out there, but you've got to be very mindful of the minefield of dietary deceptions that we have to put up with.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that, you know, go take a pill, go supplement, you know, leads me to my next question. Someone really wants to know, I need to hear more on vitamin D3. We're told that the serum levels are far too low and it's impacting immunity, hormone function, muscle pain, et cetera. Please ask him to explain further.
I never imagined I would spend the rest of my life talking about vitamin D. But
it's so big right now. Vitamin D is having a big moment.
Yes, it is. I talk about it all the time. The D stands for deception. The D stands for damage. The D stands for death. Mm. And people think I'm crazy when I say that. Where to begin? When sunlight kisses our skin, there's two simultaneous events. The sunlight activates the vitamin D synthesis, and the body starts to turn the cholesterol under our skin and start the process to turn it into storage D in the liver, which requires magnesium, like I said earlier. And then when we need some active D, it goes to the kidney, where it's kissed by magnesium again. There's actually eight enzymes in vitamin D metabolism that require magnesium. Really important. And so the first mistake that's being made is to think that we are low mm-hmm. based on a storage molecule.
The serum in the blood, right? Mm-hmm.
And so let's back up. It's a storage hormone. Mm. And there's an active hormone. It's not a vitamin. There's nothing vitamin about storage D and active D.
It's a hormone though, right?
These are hormones.
Yeah.
These are hormones, exactly right. And so what people need to ask themselves is, whenever I'm having a hormone tested, the doctor always wants to know my storage and active status. Mm. Well, what's it called? What's the active called? Free T3.
Yes.
Right? What's available? What's active? And so vitamin D is the only hormone that they only look at the storage level, never the active. That people should be really curious about that. And what other hormone can you buy over the counter?
You can buy all of them over the counter now. You can get a prescription, right?
Well, you have to get a prescription. You have to get a prescription. And so people should be really cautious about, why are they trying to sell this hormone over the counter? Again, it's uncomfortable, but we're living in a post-1984 world. Mm. Everything's backwards. What's black is white. What's white is black. So we just have to come to grips with that. And so up until 2010, what was considered sufficient storage D was 12.5. And then Michael Hollick beat his chest and said, no, it needs to be above 30. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm from Baltimore, grew up, I was born and raised in Baltimore. My nickname is Baltimorely. And I worship at the altar of Hopkins. Really talented clinicians have come through that program. And Dr. Mohammed Amer and his colleagues in 2013 did a study of all-cause mortality versus storage D level. And what they concluded was there's no clinical benefit to having storage D above 21.
Wow.
So I've got clients who come in with a storage D in the 70s and 80s, and these are very sick puppies.
Because they've been supplementing, right?
They've been supplementing. Mm-hmm. Again, the form of vitamin D that comes from the sun kissing our skin, it's sulfated. It's water soluble. Mm. And Stephanie Seneff writes beautifully about that and how important that water solubility is. The stuff that's coming in the bottle, it's fat soluble. Mm-hmm. It gets stuck in the liver.
Okay.
And it takes 4 years for that to work its way out of our body.
Wow.
And so the other thing, again, to reinforce what I said a few minutes ago, all of the faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall buildings attributes given to vitamin D are because the active form is attached to VDR, which is attached to RXR. That's in the footnotes of the literature. They don't make a big deal out of that on the internet. Mm-hmm. They just want you popping the pills.
Yeah.
And so the other thing that's important for people to recognize is that September 24th, 1955, President Eisenhower had his first of 8 heart attacks. And when that happened, everybody was put on a low cholesterol and low fat diet. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we were subjected to 65 years of tyranny.
Where Ansel Keys also.
Ansel Keys beating us over the head about, oh, fat is bad for you. And all this research that correlated high cholesterol with heart disease.
Right. But it's correlation. It's epidemiology. It's not causation. That's
right.
Ugh, it drives me crazy.
Right. And so do flies cause garbage? No. No, they don't. Do firemen cause fires? No, but they're correlated. Flies right. always seem to show up with garbage, and firemen always seem to show up with fires, but they didn't cause them, right?
Right.
And so now they've looked at, and now we have the son of cholesterol called vitamin D. Again, it's made from cholesterol under our skin, and all correlation research. Well, you have low vitamin D, and that's causing in the literature it's talking about correlation, but what they're hearing is causing. Mm-hmm. And it's all correlation again, and it's so distracting. And now we're being told that, oh, if you just take vitamin D, you won't get COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, if the people really believe that, I've got a used BMW and a bridge I would love to sell them. It's just so sad that the public is being duped into this belief system. What's the three-letter word in belief? Lie. And so people don't realize that this is some very artful deception that's taking place. And when vitamin D shows low on a blood test, it means two things. It means magnesium is low in the liver, and it means iron is high in the liver.
Mm.
And when the magnesium is low in the liver and iron is high, when iron is high, it causes magnesium loss in the liver.
Mm.
And why is the iron so high? Because people don't have copper in their diet. As soon as copper is not adequately represented in the diet, iron takes off in the liver, fills up the liver, and then it drives all sorts of chaos.
How long does it take once someone starts putting copper into their diet to get rid of the iron in the body? I know you recommend people donate blood, especially women who have amenorrhea, but a woman who has a regular cycle, say she starts eating copper through the organ meats regularly, how long would that take for the liver to dispel the excess iron?
I typically say to my clients and to the students I teach, it takes about 18 months to 2 years for the body to get itself back into balance. But most people will see noticeable improvements within 90 to 120 days.
Okay.
I've had clients do it much faster, but I'd rather be a little more cautious, allow the body to surprise people. But again, we're talking about the race of the tortoise and the hare,
mm-hmm.
and everybody wants to feel better yesterday, right? Mm-hmm. Who won that race?
Right. Yeah.
The tortoise always wins that race, and everybody comes in like Seabiscuit, once they hear the bell, bing, I want to get there. No, it doesn't work that. The body can't turn on a dime like that.
Right.
And we've been conditioned by very powerful medications, mm-hmm. that you can change the physiology overnight. And what people didn't realize is that, yeah, they were masking my symptoms. They were not correcting the underlying problem.
Yeah.
Big difference.
Exactly. Oh, I like that answer, because, you know, I think when something happens that way, that quickly, I don't think it's real. I think that it takes time, mm-hmm. and patience, and not taking a bunch of pills and supplements, but doing things, you know, the right way.
Well, it takes a lifetime of incorrect decisions to get out of balance. Mm-hmm. And we expect that we're going to, within a week, feel better.
Right.
The body can't snap to like that.
Right. Well, I guess for this conversation, I know we're going to want to talk more, but I had a question come up about magnesium and the type to take. There's so many different types of magnesium. I know magnesium citrate is a popular one. I don't touch that one. It always makes me sick. We're fans of magnesium glycinate at our house here. Can you talk a little bit about, sure. what are the best types to take and which ones people should just stay away from?
So there's generally four broad categories of magnesium. We have magnesium in the water. You know, properly mineralized water has a magnesium bias to it.
Like well water?
Well water, but you'd have to mineralize it. You'd have to add minerals to it.
Got it.
So the key is to make sure that people know that when you're adding minerals, which we strongly recommend people add minerals, all of those products have a magnesium bias to them. So you're going to get a dose of magnesium in that water. Then the second form of magnesium is from foods we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is leafy green, beet greens, collard greens, you know, you name the greens, is going to have magnesium in it. Really, really good. It's going to have a lot of other things.
On where it's farmed from, right, as well.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. Yeah. But under proper conditions, proper growing conditions, leafy green vegetables all have magnesium.
Okay.
What makes them green? So that's a very rich source of magnesium as well. Then we have what's called transdermal magnesium,
mm-hmm.
and that's magnesium lotions and magnesium oil and Epsom salt, mm-hmm. and sprays. And the skin will absorb magnesium.
Okay.
Very powerful. Again, what's the biggest organ inside the body? The liver. What's the biggest organ outside the body? The skin. And they're connected. If something doesn't, if the liver can't clear something on the inside, it pushes it to the skin. So you can see you got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's what acne is. That's what psoriasis is. That's what eczema is. All these problems that we have, the body's just saying, hey, I can't deal with it. You deal with it now.
Mm-hmm.
And so transdermal is amazing. And so we typically recommend, you know, foot baths or full baths. And there's a formula that we have on the website. And it's just very relaxing. Why? Because people are parasympathetic when they're taking a bath.
Mm-hmm.
They're calm. They're chill. They're not on hyper overdrive. You know? And so you're not going to be having an argument with someone when you're taking a magnesium bath.
Hopefully not.
No, you're going to be kind of
lock the door.
Exactly. No, I've told many clients.
Yeah.
So you got to have your moment. Lock the door so your spouse has to take care of the kids and just enjoy your bath, and they love that. And then the fourth kind is the supplements that you buy and get in a bottle that are chelated forms, and there are about 25 different forms of chelated magnesium, mm-hmm. and the two that are the best absorbed are magnesium malate and magnesium glycinate.
Okay.
Technically, it's magnesium bisglycinate, because you're getting two molecules of glycinate with each molecule of magnesium, but or with each atom of magnesium. But the thing is, those are very well absorbed. Now, then we get into like orotate, great form, gluconate, another good form. There are many, many different variations. And then the one that's probably got the biggest market share is magnesium citrate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, citrate is a misunderstood molecule. It's inside our Krebs cycle, but it's also considered the endogenous inhibitor of ceruloplasmin. Well, we worship at the altar of ceruloplasmin in the RCP. Another, the RCP stands for root cause protocol, but it also could stand for restore ceruloplasmin, please. And that's really what we're trying to do, because when you do that, it's incredibly powerful. And we don't do anything to try to compromise ceruloplasmin. That's why we stay away from ascorbic acid. That's why we stay away from citrate. That's why we stay away from vitamin D. People don't realize what vitamin D is doing to their ceruloplasmin. And it's, you know, we don't have time in this conversation to explain what vitamin D does to retinol to stop the manufacturing or the natural synthesis of ceruloplasmin, but it's a big deal. It's headlines as far as we're concerned. So that we recommend the malate and the glycinate just because they are incredibly well absorbed. And I just think there's tremendous benefit that comes from that. Now, the form that I like in particular is, it's a time release formula. It's made by Jigsaw Health. And I'm lazy. I really am. People don't really, you know, I measure an inch with my thumb. That's an inch. And so I take my supplements at the beginning of the day after breakfast. And I don't think about my supplements the rest of the day. And I love the fact that I have a time-released form of magnesium. It helps me deal with the stress that I have all day long. If anybody's looking for more stress, come on down. And I'll trade places with you, and you deal in this, sit in this seat and see what it's like to take on the entire medical establishment, tell them they're wrong, but not just tell them, prove that they're wrong, and get on the airwaves day in and day out, and have these types of really engaged conversations, but it's stress inducing because you're bucking the system.
Yeah.
And you know what that's like because you're living it.
I do it every day.
You're an internet warrior yourself. So it's like, again, people don't appreciate the work that goes into running these educational sites.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it. I'm doing my life's work. I feel so excited. I bounce out of bed in the morning because I can't wait to get to Starbucks and start reading about what's something new. And oh my God, I wish I had 3 hours right now to tell you the articles I read this morning, because it was just, it's like, wow, it's so cool because it's right there in the literature, but it's not on the internet.
No.
They're not going to let it on the internet. Now, I found these articles on the internet, but you got to ask the question a certain way, in a certain order. And once you do, and I've learned how to sequence it, the treasure trove opens up, and it's a very different world. It's the difference between Dorothy's farm in Kansas and the land of Oz. And the internet is the land of Oz. Mm. But the research that I read is the farm in Kansas. Very different world. So I think people just need to know that the information's out there, and what we've tried to do in the root cause protocol is download that information and put it into forms that people can understand through video, through membership participation programs, through the protocol itself, through the training that we do. And the information's out there, and people just have to decide, are they willing to invest the time? Do they have the discipline and the devotion to their getting better to do what we recommend? And there are about 1,500 people a month who download the RCP manual. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so we feel really good about that. I sleep well at night knowing that many more people woke up And not 100% do it, but the majority do. And we get the testimonials. And it's very gratifying to know that we can reverse all of this insanity in our body. And it's a pretty straightforward approach, but it requires different thinking. It requires discipline and devotion. And it's just it's a different approach.
Yeah.
Very different approach.
Yeah. Well, Morley, I really appreciate this conversation. I know we'll have more to come, but I'll put all of your information below and the website for the Root Cause Protocol below the video. And I thank you so much for being here with me today.
Absolutely. Really appreciate the chance, sir.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.